It's July 18th, 2008. I'm Mike Benedetti, and this is 508, a show about Worcester. Good morning. Today on the show, we have Kevin Kassen, Cha-Cha Connor, Bruce Russell, and Brendan Malikan. How is everyone?
Excellent. Great. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Wonderful.
We haven't done a show, a live show like this, or a current show like this in a couple of weeks. And strangely enough, the issue of street vendors in Worcester remains current and remains dynamic. And Cha-Cha and Kevin, you guys have actually been like out there talking to some vendors recently.
That's right.
I'm going to go grab a cup of coffee, but tell people about this while I'm getting this coffee.
Kevin, you want to do it or should I?
Go for it.
Great. So what we did was, kind of some background on this, right? As most people on the show know, the city is considering passing some ordinances that would impact the street vendors, everyone from the guy who sells flowers on Front Street to, the hot dog and sausage salesman in front of the Palladium. And some of these ordinances kind of, it seems stupid to me, frankly, and seem anti-small business, you know, like the ordinance that's proposed against operating after midnight, the ordinance proposed against operating on Main Street or having to move your cart 500 feet every 5 minutes. It not only strikes me as stupid, but, you know, basically anti-people who aren't making a whole lot of money and are just trying to make a buck. So what we wound up doing was we wound up creating, with the help of one guy on Water Street, a petition that street vendors could have in their carts for clients and whoever to sign against these ordinances, against any measure that would restrict small business and particularly the street vendors. And Kevin also got 1 minute video clips with a lot of vendors about what they think about this. So to me, that's a really good thing, because I feel like when I was in city council listening to them talk about it, the city councilors, I mean, you know, they weren't really seeing the guy on the street who they were talking about. And the other thing, you know, and I'll wrap up with this, that came up for me was, you know, there's a question, like, who are these folk? Who are these street vendors anyway, you know? And their stories are really varied, you know. One woman told me, oh, you know, at 2 a.m. after my husband's made a buck, he feeds the homeless folks who come around for free, you know. And another person was actually a former employee of the Green Island Neighborhood Center whose job got cut when there weren't enough funds. Of course, we in Green Island are aware that a lot of community development block grant money was spent on a big intersection right next to our neighborhood. But her job that was helping us got cut, and now she's selling hot dogs in front of, you know, Irish Times. And so that was shocking to me. That was really personal. So that's what I've got for right now. And Kevin, you want to talk about next step?
Well, we're working on getting vendors out to the next hearing. There's no date set as yet. I talked to Councillor Hall a couple days ago. She's thinking probably August 12th. But I think it's getting real voices out there, and that's kind of what we wanted to work on.
So that's an important other point. The vendor issue, you know, rather than going to a committee on economic development or a committee on business, I've now gone to a committee on public safety. So the vendors are being called a public safety issue. To me, this is one of the things that's just ridiculous. You know, personally, my feeling is that Michael Germain hit it on the head. You know, in a lot of cities, you know, street vendors are a good sign because they're a sign of economic vitality and life in a city. And, you know, when he, at the last council meeting, he said, do we want to be a vibrant city, or do we want to be a bedroom community for Westboro? All right, this is just embarrassing, you know? So to me, the whole thing is ridiculous. And I think to a lot of the vendors have said the same thing, that it's ridiculous. So I think that's what we've got.
What is the reaction you guys have seen when talking to some of the vendors that are out there? It's are all of them aware of what's going on with the ordinances, or have you found anyone that hasn't even really been made aware that there are changes to the ordinances in play?
I've been glad. Everybody's known about it.
Everyone has known about it.
So collectively, I think word's gotten out. Good.
Had you talked to the gentleman from the El Delicioso at all?
Yeah, no, sure. Definitely. Yeah, and I think he was one of the reasons we wanted to really get out there, just really feeling his voice. His story was just been like lost in this whole thing.
There's a great website out there called Street. I think you and I talked about this, Kevin, in the past. There's a website called streetvendor.org that essentially has done the same thing, you know, for street vendors in New York. They just give their profiles and whatnot, talk about what they do, and kind of put a face to the actual the businesses that they run, as opposed to just allowing the city demonize, you know, what they're doing without ever actually, you know, because it kind of can be a faceless crew for people who spend most of their lives in cars.
Really cool, Brendan.
It's a really amazing website. It's a great resource too for anyone else who's looking to just show a little bit of support for folks that are otherwise nameless and just standing there on the side of the road.
Well, Kevin, I'm looking forward to seeing your videos. It sounds like an interesting thing.
I'm a photographer. I caveat it with that.
You take movies like a photographer. You know, I was last week we had the big National Catholic Worker Gathering in Worcester, and I was trying to think of how to explain Worcester politics to people. You know, this odd thing that the city council or the city in general so often seems hostile both to the poor and to business. You know, neither liberal or conservative in that sense. And all I could come up with was just sort of like housing values are like the number one thing. Like being a bedroom community for Westboro really does seem to be on their agenda. Which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it would be it's odd to me that, you know, you could read a lot about politics in the city and listen to people talk a lot about politics in the city and not hear a city councilor come straight out and say, my priority is housing prices and everything is, you know, or home values and everything else is a distant second. So, I mean, this is like, I mean, obviously in the vendor thing, you do have like, you know, three or four councilors who are, you know, loud dissenters on this issue. But so often it seems like there's no dissenters on these issues.
Yeah, I think Kevin's alluded to this before, and it seems to me that they're really out of touch, and it also seems to me really disturbing that in general, the consensus on the current city council seems to be we need to bring the solution to all our problems is to bring more of those upper middle class people from Boston and Providence to live in Worcester, right? And, you know, if we do a little bit of that, I mean, fine, right? But that seems to be the exclusive focus. And what's disturbing to me is two things, right? That not a whole lot of regard, not only for poor folks, but for anybody living in our neighborhood seems to be shown. I think that comes up on a lot of issues, including the vendor issue. But just secondly, that it's just so out of touch. And I guess I would go to Brendan, we had a whole conversation about your conversation with Connie Lukes regarding the vendors, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, it's an interesting issue because the perspective is all, it's a perspective that's based on a time that's already passed, you know, where street vendors and, or more so even canteen trucks, which you rarely see off of a job site anymore, were actually did compete with brick and mortar businesses. And I don't think that sort of competition really exists anymore. The resources for restaurants, for brick and mortars in the city to do whatever they want, you know, and they like and excel as an established brick and mortar restaurant, that the opportunities are relatively endless, right? I mean, the street vendor model is kind of right now, I mean, is mostly just viewed as a gateway to either maybe something bigger or, you know, just like a way into that marketplace, but it's not viewed as something that's really competitive. I think everyone has said this at some point in time, almost in awe that, you know, if we are worried about, you know, some of our more established brick and mortar restaurants to be losing business to street vendors, it doesn't say a lot about the way we view our brick and mortar restaurants, right? I mean, it's people just aren't diverting from the, you know, the chop house to go to a water dog cart. They both fill very, very specific and very different needs in, you know, a marketplace. Yeah, and you mentioned too that you're bringing in like middle class folks from Boston, Providence. The great thing is, or the irony is that if we were to start bringing, you know, masses of people from Boston and Providence, they have expectations of living in a city, and we can't actually meet them. So, like, the folks, the reason why we're not seeing the influx, or part of the reason why we're not seeing the influx, even the target demographic that the city wants to bring into the city, is because we can't provide the basic resources that they would expect when they get here. And
right.
That's just ridiculous. But again, it has to do with lack of vision. We don't have a council that has spent enough time out of the city or has spent enough time in cities, period, to understand what works. I mean, Mike,
right.
You mentioned this a couple weeks back that, you know, what gives the city council the right or the title to actually be urban planners, right? I mean, like, where have we seen any sort of, like, experience on the folks that are planning the city?
Or success. I mean, what are their victories?
Right, there's really nothing there. And I mean, and it's not that everyone, you need to be an expert and have a doctorate in urban planning to understand the basics of urban planning, but you do have to, like you just said, show some success. You know, if you're not doing it right, well, chances are good you're not going to figure it out the further along you go, right? You're probably failing because you've got a poor vision of what a city actually is. And mm-hmm. Truth be told, a lot of the folks who are running the show in the city don't even live in the city anymore, which is, I guess, fine from a constitutional perspective, but we've got people who are passing judgment on the way the city should be managed, and they're not really even members of the community. You know, it's like the best way that I can relate that is I spend most of my week in Watertown. You know, I live in Worcester. This is my community, but I work in Watertown. I would never go to the Watertown City Council meeting and start giving them advice on how to run their city because I'm not a member of their community. I just happen to work there. And the majority of the people who come to City Council meetings now on behalf of the city, right, like senior administration members, are in there giving us advice on how to manage our city. They're not members of our community. They just work here. And there's a big difference, and I think it's a difference that people really need to start focusing on, whether it's an issue like street vendors, which regardless of how it plays out, you know, that's just today's issue, right? Next week it'll be something else, or next
right.
month it'll be something else. And the reality is the people who are going to be making those decisions aren't members of our community, and that's really scary. It should be
right.
frightening to people who...
I think the example on that, Brendan, is the vendor hearing from a few weeks ago when David Moore first got up. And I love David Moore. I think he's one of the best folks in City Hall. But he didn't realize the hot dog guy parked next to Elm Park.
Right.
You know, he's like, well, he's in the park and he's okay. He's not under this ordinance because he's in the park. And Councilor Rosen goes, no, he parks next to the park. And, you know, he goes again, like, well, he's like in the park. It's okay. Like anyone really around Worcester knows that the hot dog guy parks where he parks.
Right. Yeah. And those should be little things, right? I mean, we can't all be experts on the city, but just interacting with the city gives you a pretty good idea of how things are being managed. If you really just come to Worcester to sit in an office and, you know, commute both ways by car, going back to wherever you come from, your view of the city is going to be a little bit different than someone who just, you know, meanders around and, you know, is just out and about in the city interacting with folks.
Well, I'm going to change the subject to something unrelentingly positive for a second, and then we can go back to complaining about the city. Last week in Worcester, we had the National Catholic Worker Gathering, which
Woo.
Was pretty sweet. You know, a certain subsection of the community, the Worcester community, came out to that, and people from all around the world. I think the farthest away people we had were from Germany. I don't think any New Zealanders came. And it was great. Our Dan Kelly, who has been waging a one-sided feud with this podcast occasionally, was there and, you know, was kind of a jerk and was also at sometimes kind of okay, but didn't have a flip out. Nobody else had a big flip out. And nobody else had any crises. And people just had a great time talking about religion and politics and their lifestyles. And I don't know. It was really, really great. I was really happy to we did it at Our Lady of Mount Carmel, which is a good location, not too far from the train station and the bus station there. And people had a good experience of Worcester, I think, overall.
Michael, was Dan there on behalf of the Anti-Zionist League?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, yeah. And he wrote something. There's actually something on the their Anthony Mora website, which I think Tony wrote. It seems like Tony wrote based on talking to Dan, which, you know, I could charitably describe as being somewhat fanciful and uncharitably describe as basically lies. But, you know, I mean, he has some photos of himself at the thing. Anyway, I mean, like that was like a very minor deal, you know. And I have to say, like,
are we focusing on it?
No, we're not going to focus on that. I just wanted to throw that out there. I just wanted to mention that there. You know, overall, like I said, overall it was great. I feel like personally, I felt a little bit, I don't know if I felt dissatisfied with Worcester, but I felt like my relationship to Worcester has not been a good one. I feel like maybe I'm expecting things from the city should not give me. And it was just interesting talking to people and, you know, sort of getting my head out of my day-to-day space and thinking about the kinds of things I would like to do in the next year or two. And so I'm actually more excited about the city now, actually, you know, thinking about, I can't explain this very well, but anyway, there it is. And Cha-Cha and Kevin, I know we're there too, but I don't know if they have anything big to say about that event.
I think the most exciting things, you know, and I'm speaking as a non-Catholic person curious about the CW, and I've admired the Catholic worker movement for a long time, and I think there were a couple of really good things that came out of it for me, one of which was finding out that Catholic workers are really concerned about what's going to happen with Iran. And this, you know, I got to confess, this the whole Iran issue has been something that I've been kind of like, okay, as a peace activist, I ought to be concerned about this. But let's go to foreclosures. Let's go to the vendors, you know. So it's been kind of on the back burner of my heart, you know. And so it was really great for me to kind of get that back in the forefront, think about it seriously for a minute, talk with you, Mike, kind of about how Catholic workers were thinking about it, and just know that there's going to be some awesome CW activism about that. The other issues that came up, which were a surprise for me, was that Catholic workers were concerned about immigration. I guess that was less of a surprise for me. I knew that Catholic worker houses were helping folks in a bad situation with that regard, you know, and that's really cool, you know. And then just that there was a workshop on building a gay-friendly Catholic worker, which as a local GLBTQ activist, I was really, really happy to see.
Yeah. I have to say that that's still somewhat of a controversial issue. Not that, you know, you should be gay-friendly, but just that like that was actually the only workshop that I as the person who was sort of trying to help people schedule their pickup workshops, that was the only workshop I got a complaint about, that somebody had come up to me and said, why are you putting this on there? Isn't this kind of a dumb issue? And you know, and I was like, I don't think it's, you know, if people want to have the workshop, first of all, they should have the workshop. And second of all, I don't think it's a dumb issue. Like, I think
it's
you know,
really important.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't be discouraged when, like, you know, somebody comes at you that way. I mean, let me tell you, I've been at, you know, plenty of, you know, GLBT events where workshops come up and people have been like, isn't this kind of a dumb issue, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like not great that folks say that, but it happens and you just go forward.
Hey, Bruce Russell's on the phone too. I totally forgot. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, Mike.
Bruce. Bruce, how the hell are you?
Oh, pretty good.
What are you going to say?
No, I was just going to say that rather if somebody wants to do a gay thing for the W or CW for a gay whatever. I mean, regardless if you're gay or whatever, you're still a human being, and people a lot of times forget that. I got one other thing too.
He was talking about
the venues. Well, what about the ice cream guy? Isn't he the senior venue?
A vendor?
Yeah.
I don't know. The ice cream guy I actually kind of hate because his thing is so loud, but I don't know if that means he should be banned. Maybe he should just turn his thing down. Anyway, you know, Bruce, whatever you talk about, people who are gay are also people. You know, like the Catholic Church and many other Christian denominations would say, well, you know, we have to, you know, love a person who's gay, even if we want to condemn their sexual behavior. And like, however you feel about their sexual behavior, so often that de facto actually just means we're going to condemn this person and say that they're evil and we're going to be hateful towards them. And so to me, that's what being like gay friendly can be all about, is, you know, is saying like, how do we make sure that we're not alienating people, or how can we be, you know, for people who do want to be judgmental about other people's sexual behavior, how can you do that without being judgmental towards them in general?
Well, but I think that even people who like want to question someone's sexuality, and the people who do that should take a look at themselves, because they're not perfect themselves either. And
yes,
they look at their lifestyle. I mean, as people like want to pick a person because he's this and this and that, well, how about this person do the same thing to that person? I mean, it makes no, two rights don't make it wrong. So, I mean,
right,
people shouldn't talk about somebody else because they're not freaking saints themselves.
You know, it's often pointed out that the Bible condemns sexuality or homosexuality a time or two, and condemns hypocrisy dozens of times. which is sort of, you know, the inverse of what we often get from our churches these days.
Right. I was just going to say that. I think, like, the other part for me of the gathering that was really great was Father Bernie's homily, you know? And what I heard during the Mass on Saturday, you know, I didn't hear one person say a word about, you know, homosexuality or whatever, you know? I heard a lot of condemnation of war, of violence, you know, and of
torture,
you know, yeah, torture and the situation that we've created around the world that leads to poverty. You know, those are the things I heard condemned at the Catholic Worker Gathering. And more than just condemned, the great thing was I felt so much energy in that room full of people around changing it, you know. And, you know, and that was just great, like as a non-CW2 experience. And the thing that I'll finish with is, Thursday night, I also found out that Catholic workers are amazing dancers. So that was also
right.
Really awesome.
You know, one thing that I was struck by at this gathering is that the Catholic worker movement is really like either at some kind of peak or still in the middle of an upswing. One of the historians mentioned, well, you know, according to the websites, there's 185 Catholic worker houses, but I think there's more like 200 Catholic worker houses. And when I look at – there's so many things in society today, and especially in the church, which are either on the decline or which are struggling mightily and defensively to not go on the decline. And this is a thing where, like, you know, I mean, you got a huge number of young people. You have a hell of a lot of energy, you know – you know, again, like totally either like on the upswing or at some kind of peak right now with the Catholic worker movement. It was exciting to me that the Bishop of Worcester was willing to come out and, you know, say the Mass to conclude the gathering because, as you know, but as controversial as the Catholic worker movement can be, you know, I think that there's this deep desire of most of the people there, at least, to, you know, make some kind of peace with their church, like as imperfect as they feel the Catholic Church is, you know, and as much as they like to criticize the Catholic Church, that at the same time, you know, they're proud to be Catholics, you know, Catholics for better or for worse, and you know, it's nice to be able to have, you know, the bishop out there, and it's nice to be able to have like that kind of sign of real unity.
In a similar vein, I think it was really great for Congressman McGovern to come out, and I really appreciated him coming by. You don't expect to see a congressman at an assemblage of some of the farthest leftist activists in the country too often, so that was really good. And it was, for me, it was just part of, as similar to what you were feeling, Mike, of kind of the Worcester energy there. You know, I kind of went, like, expecting and looking forward to, like, hearing the voices of some of the folks from across the country that, you know, I've met on occasion or read of their activities in their papers or what have you. But I actually ended up experiencing just a lot of, like, great Worcester energy, just real strong reminders of just how deeply the Catholic workers kind of infused into Worcester. Just the long history of the mustard seed and the folks that toiled through hard years there. Folks that worked on the farm and out in Upton, and Dorothy's visits to out this way, and just the circle of folks that haven't lived at the Catholic Worker, but in Worcester, you know, turn out for Catholic Worker stuff because they want to be there, and that list of names of folks and what have you, along with Father Bernie and everything. So I left really excited about the impact the Catholic Workers had on Worcester out of this.
Yeah, for people who are listening to this who think of the Catholic Worker in Worcester as Scott Schaefer Duffy and maybe then secondarily Claire Schaefer Duffy, you know, there were, I would say, about 20 local Catholic Worker people who worked really hard to organize this. And that doesn't exhaust the number of Catholic Worker people who are around. That's just the number of people who were deeply involved with the planning on this. And that's pretty exciting.
And I think speaking from, like, the non-Catholic worker, you know, officially non-Catholic worker, and two, like, you know, the Catholic worker has had such an influence even beyond those 20 people. Like, you know, one name that was brought up at the Mass was Abby Hoffman, you know, who's, like, you know, to me, totally part of my Worcester pride, part of my Worcester history. And he, you know, was Jewish, and he was very much influenced by Father Bernie, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, you know, and I think there are a lot of us like that. You know, I've never slept in the Catholic Worker house. I've never, you know, I'm Jewish, okay? But having been around these folks and having been, you know, mentored in activism by a lot of these folks, you know, I can see what an influence it's had on my life, and it's so special for me to be in a room and, like, really talk about it and have it be brought to the forefront, because it's been great as kind of background, you know, but it's even greater in front.
Well, that's enough positive stuff. What do you guys want to complain about in the city?
Well, I got one last thing about the care of the workers.
All right, Bruce. Bruce, you can say one last nice thing, but then you have to say something bad about Worcester.
All right.
Or maybe you can spin this into something negative about the Catholic worker.
Okay, Bruce Russell, the snow ghost, hit it.
I think the greatest thing about doing it is that going to that thing that nobody really. It was, like, great to go walk into that place and then they'll leave at the same time, and nobody. It's like, first you see me night at dawn, it's like, where did he go? I thought that was the best thing about the whole thing, because nobody saw me in there and nobody saw me leave, so I was just like a big shadow, and it's just, wonder how I can do that, man. It's just a wonderful thing, man.
It helps if you're a trained ninja. All right.
It just helps being an apparition, so.
Bruce, you hate Worcester. Say something. What is going on that's frustrating you in the city this week?
Well, it's just, I guess it's the thing that kind of, I don't know what much effect is this. The other night on the news, I think Worcester news that President Bush was talking about, well, the economy is like growing, and I'm like, is this why is like people like are getting out of losing their jobs? Like General Motors just cutting their big salary jobs, you know, whatever and stuff like that. And
anybody else have anything to talk about in the city? Any other issues?
Well, the big thing on the city's glitz and spotlight last week was the Buy Worcester Now campaign.
What is this? This is like a home buying thing?
Yeah, it's like, here we are, you know, Worcester's struggling with a lot of empty houses. You need to come here and buy a house, you know, good deals. So the city manager did a big, big presentation over at the DCU Center. So it was like half the city's planning office was there just doing directing you to the correct places to go stuff. And the manager personally put on a 45-minute show on this is why Buy Worcester Now is great. And I think the hard part for me is in a lot of ways I the idea is important. You know, the idea is important that we should be buying houses in Worcester, and you know, a lot of my life has been spent supporting the idea of people owning their and living in the neighborhood. But I think the concern I left with out of there was similar to what we were saying with the vendor stuff, is there was a lot of energy coming from the city hall part of the group saying we need to get those people to come in to Worcester to buy houses. And that's what I was hearing. One of the things the manager said he was most excited about was his dream and hope was to be able to put billboards up in Boston and Providence so that people would know that they could come to Worcester to buy houses. And that's exactly the mentality we're stuck in Worcester right now. Is like, how do we get those Boston Province people to move here? And there was, he was excited just about putting billboards up in Boston, even if they didn't actually come here, but just like, show them. We're putting a Worcester billboard up in Boston.
We should put up a billboard of Bruce in Boston. That would be pretty sweet.
And I'm sitting there, and the group of us were sitting there, and we're going like, well, why do we have to try to convince people to move to Worcester by houses? We got like thousands and thousands of renters here in Worcester. So the Worcester foreclosure group that I'm part of, one of the things we're going to challenge the city on is we want billboards up in Worcester. You know, we want a Spanish billboard in Worcester saying, you know, compra tu casa aquí, you know, and buy your house here. And let's support Worcester residents buying houses, and let's not focus on putting up billboards in Boston and in Providence.
When this program was first rolled out, it was made semi-public was a city council meeting, and I was sitting with somebody in the audience who had a laptop, and we were looking at the site as it was coming to life. And at first, it was wow, this is great. I mean, this is exactly what the city needs. And then when reality started to set in. I'm like, this is absolutely ridiculous. What they're doing, like, it violates every rule of creating demand, right? It's it's basically admitting that we have a surplus of a product, yet we want you to come in here and invest in that surplus. And that's not how you get people to buy. I mean, even if you want to create demand, you have to create an artificial sense of actual demand, right? Unfortunately, there is no demand right now. There's no demand for what there's a demand for in the Worcester housing market is copper, right? I mean, like that's something that the city still hasn't dealt with. Is we haven't, well, Chacha mentioned before, you know, like we haven't convinced people to come here from Worcester, from Boston and Providence. Yet we're still trying really hard, but we're trying the wrong way. We're telling folks in Boston who are spending three times as much on, you know, individual homes, four times, five times as much on individual homes, that they'd be happier here. But we don't ever follow that up with, like, why you would be happier here. So we're not even actually successfully targeting the demographic that we want to move here. We're just saying, hey, you can buy a house. We're actually spending money and marketing dollars on just telling people the obvious fact that you can buy something in Worcester. It's just ridiculous. Like, of course you can buy a house in Worcester. We know the reason that people aren't buying houses in Worcester isn't because they just didn't notice the second largest city in New England existed. It's because of the myriad of other problems that stand in the way of someone actually moving here. And, you know, Kevin, you're absolutely right when you say we got to target our. I would say that the majority of renters in Worcester probably don't realize how easy it is to buy a house in Worcester right now. But, like, becoming a homeowner in Worcester right now is. Maybe it's too easy, and maybe that's why we're the mess we're in, you know, nationally, in terms of mortgages and whatnot. But property values are, I mean, it's almost like a balloon, like, let go, you know, and you can just hear zipping around Worcester right now as property values decrease, and we still haven't had a run on property in the city. It's like, whether it's foreclosures or just organically dropping prices, people still aren't snapping these things up, which is amazing. And speaks volumes to the way we view our own city and the way outsiders view us.
Mike.
Bruce.
Hey, it's kind of funny because it's like, and the problem is if you buy a house in Worcester, and because I was one time I was thinking about doing that, but I met with several people as the broker on a Park Avenue, and they said, well, most people have to earn $40,000 a year to be able to buy a house, say like $200,000, and then you have to, like, and then once you even have the money, it's like, if you have your own money and something like that, it's just like, you have to, there's like question marks. Well, why is it a person, it's easier to get approved from a bank or a bank or something like that in Florida, but he trying to get the same thing in Worcester.
There you go.
It doesn't make any freaking sense, man. It's like, and it's just like when they try to encourage people to come to Worcester, that at the same time, you're like, the businesses, it's like when the BU opened up downtown or down in that next to the, underneath the fashion outlet.
That was the art theater downtown, the movie theater.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But they were encouraged, but at the same time, people like Jordan Levy and all them people wanted this place to close, and they got bought out, and the woman who owned that place had to sell it or something like that, and now they're sitting there empty. It's the same with what Worcester does. They encourage people coming in, but at the same time, they want to tell you to get the fuck out, so, you know?
You know, Bruce, I'm glad you mentioned Jordan Levy, because this gives me an opportunity to read some recent Jordan Levy blog post titles. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Hold on. I have to talk in kind of an elevated voice to this. How about us? They're right. He's wrong. An epidemic. I've decided. As it should be. Build it and they shall come. It's a sign of the times. Can we afford it? All we have to do is live long enough. Words. Oh, wait. I think this one we might have done before, but let me just say it again. Words. You can't take them back. They're awesome. They're just like Markov generated, I think. Some kind of Markov chain. Just some kind of auto.
All we have to do is live long enough.
All we have to do is live long enough. I don't even know where that one is. I may have lost that
one. Good piece of advice.
Yeah, I know how you live long enough.
How is that?
just listen to black metal. Give you a soul that you never had before. And the shoe on the soul in the shoe doesn't help either, so, man.
There you go. Well, all we have to do is live long enough is something about... It's a prediction of oil prices in 2015 will drop by half. He says, so all we have to do is live for another 7 years and we'll probably be able to enjoy $3 gasoline again.
That's one thing I thought was kind of funny that that people are complaining about gold. Bush was like complaining about depending on foreign oil. I mean, it's like if you get sick of depending on foreign oil, why don't you do something about it instead of complaining about it? He's got a big oil rig in Texas, so why don't you just shut up and go do it?
you're saying that the president himself should basically just make it happen.
All right. I mean,
stop pretending you have no power, Mr. President.
All right, you're thinking because you are. First of all, he had his government create the war in Iraq. First of all, he gave them the freaking people the training, their weapons. Now he wants to have the foreigners go support a little war that he's so losingly badly losing. I mean, this guy needs to take some birth control pills or some goddamn thing and just tell him to shut the hell up.
You know, Bruce, I'm going to change the subject again back to Worcester and say, does anybody else have any big issues to talk about this week? And if not, let me just run through everybody and ask you, what are you excited about this week in Worcester? Kevin Kassen. I feel like I'm John McLaughlin. Kevin Kassen!
What am I excited about in Worcester?
Yes!
I'm excited Latino Festival is coming up again. I look forward to it every year. I feel sad that we're kicked back out onto the asphalt the main street for the ice skating rink, but I'm looking forward to that. And every year, it feels there's a broader cross section of Worcester coming down there. More folks from the city council feeling they need to show up for a little while or what have you. Some probably even actually coming because they really enjoy it, want to be there. So that's great.
Cha Cha Connor.
I'm excited about upcoming Green Island activism, as per usual. I am so psyched that Green Island folks are getting involved in Save Our Pools. We are really pissed that City Council and Commissioner Boylan are strongly considering closing the Crompton Park pool. We're getting really active about it, doing good stuff. I'm very excited about that. We're getting active about foreclosures and about neighborhood cleanups, and... there have been other ideas thrown out from Green Island as well, such as having a really cool kind of neighborhood/internationally-oriented block party in Crompton Park, which may include an idea from a local artist, Bill Lund, called Green Island Idol. And my mother's a huge American Idol fan, right? So I've never gotten into it, but I feel like
I did not know that about your mother.
She admitted it here.
Right, just to talk about my mom on the podcast for half a sec. But I think, while American Idol is not something I've ever really been into, Green Island Idol is something I could really get into because Green Island is a neighborhood with amazing talents and amazing people, and that's what I'm excited about all summer, all year, doing good stuff in Green Island.
You know what I'm also excited about, actually, vis-a-vis you, Cha-Cha, is that months and months ago on this program, we were the first to announce that you and Jesse Pack were going to attempt to do this transgender emergency fund.
That's right.
And that you were going to try to raise thousands of dollars. And as much as I mm-hmm. thought this was a great idea, I was also kind of thinking, is there really thousands of dollars in Worcester for like a transgender emergency fund? Like, is this really going to...
Yep.
And now you say you're a few hundred dollars from your goal.
Yeah. So thank you so much for bringing that up, Mike. So, you know, a really exciting thing that happened recently that I believe I announced on this podcast was that we did another fantastic drag show this past Friday, right? So yesterday I got Neil Diamond's compliment, so I was very happy. Best beard I've ever done, you know. But the bottom line is we are, hold on, let me do it up. We are $355 away from being able to start the granting cycle. So in other words, being able to give, you know, small kind of on the emergency level grants to extremely low income transgender individuals in Worcester. And you may not, if you're listening to this, you may not realize that, like, transgender folks in Worcester is even an issue, But at the GLBT department and AIDS Project Worcester, we're kind of a clearinghouse for this issue, and we see it all the time. And even though it's an invisible population, in a lot of cases, we know that it's a huge issue, right? So $355, and we can start, you know, giving folks money for, you know, staying in your homes, paying your phone bill if you're looking for work, and this is all connected with the assistance we already provide. And one thing I've pointed out in this podcast in the past is, you know, some folks might ask, well, you know, why should we help these folks? Why should we be particularly concerned? Well, unlike other groups of folks, transgender individuals are not protected from any kind of employment or housing discrimination. So you can look an individual in the eye and say, I'm sorry, no transgender folks need apply, and it is perfectly legal in Massachusetts and in most, if not all, states. So, not all states, but most states. So that really, you know, and then imagine being like, you know, say homeless on top of that, you know, and you're getting doors slammed in your face all over the place. So there's a real need for this. So, you know, if anybody who's listening feels like contributing to that $355, I don't know what you can do. You can call Chacha at AIDS Project Worcester. Thanks.
Bruce Russell, is there anything good you can say about Worcester today?
No, not really.
Brendan Mellican, how about you?
Well, yeah, it's funny that Chacha was just talking about Jesse and AIDS Project Worcester. The entire time you guys have been talking, I've been reading the AIDS Project Worcester mailing, the newsletter that I just got yesterday, which is pretty awesome. I usually love complaining about... I love complaining about local mailings in Worcester. Joe Petty is the only person who I have not... I thought his mailings in the last election were pretty awesome because they involved him in, like, trombones and whatnot, but this is the first time I've received...
The quiet man.
...a local mailing that is actually pretty awesome. And there's a little... There's like a profile of Jesse in the back about, you know, winning his Safe Homes People of Courage Award. But it's a really great mailing. I'd love to know how they got my address. I mean, I try and control pretty tightly, like, my local address and whatnot, because I like trying to figure out where, like, the channel of people getting a hold of mailing lists come from. But it's the first time I've received anything from AIDS Project Worcester, and I'm kind of glad that it came through.
Brendan, to answer your question, we have ninja spies.
You sold my address, is what you're saying. How much did you make off of this?
No. I have no idea.
Bruce, did you have something to say? Because I wanted to bring up Joe Petty's Buick real quick before we sign off. But Bruce,
you know,
what did you have to...
I got to head out, so I got to sign off myself.
All right, Bruce. Bruce, we'll talk to you later.
All right, Bruce. All right,
Bruce.
See ya. Bye.
Brendan, can you say something quick about Joe Petty's Buick, and then we can hang up?
Yeah, I mean, so I don't remember what day it was. I think it was Monday. I was cruising to work on the Mass Pike, and I passed Joe Petty. And, you know, there's sometimes you just get a vibe on the Pike when you're about to run into somebody from Worcester.
When Joe Petty is in the area.
Well, you do. You know, your Joe Petty dar goes off, I guess. I don't know. It's like the so Joe has a big Joe Petty bumper sticker on his back windshield. And I love, like, playing this game with myself when you see, like, a somewhat obscure, like, local, like, sticker like that. Like, could that be the guy? I mean, like, what are the chances of there being a Joe Petty supporter just bumping around out here in Newton or whatever the case may be?
Or Worcester.
That guy, you know, that guy gets a lot of votes.
He does. Certainly does. He really,
I like Joe.
I passed this Buick, and it had... there's Joe sipping his cup of coffee and whatnot, and he didn't see me, so I didn't wave or anything. But the... luggage rack. He's got a luggage rack on his trunk. And that I thought was really awesome. Like, you don't see that much anymore. In the days of Priuses and, you know, I mean, like, the chances are good that you will never see a hybrid with, like, a luggage rack on the trunk. I think that's something that's going to completely vanish from the landscape of American automobiles.
Because it hurts it hurts your gas mileage.
It does nothing, right? I mean, has anyone, like, ever strapped a piece of luggage to a modern luggage rack on a trunk? Like, it would probably just fly off, right? I mean, does anyone even own a secret trunk to latch to a trunk-based luggage system anymore? You know, it was awesome to see, and it fit the mold. Like, if someone had to, like, gave me a pack of crayons and said, draw me Joe Petty's car, like, having never seen Joe Petty's car, that's probably exactly what I would have driven, drawn. I mean, I would have drawn a Buick with a luggage rack on the trunk, and I'm glad to see that, you know, he's fitting his own stereotypes. That's good.
You know, if any listeners out there have a copy of Mac Paint or Windows Paint or whatever and would like to draw a picture of Joe Petty's car, I'll put it up.
Don't stop there, Mike.
I'll put it up on Pine Coffee.
I think we need to know
every counselor and their car.
If anybody draws any picture of any counselor's car, I'll put it up on Pie and Coffee, no question. Also, you know, in the show notes today, I'm going to put a link to this wonderful internet contest that happened this week, which is called Morris Day versus a Wild Animal. Yeah. On that note, I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks for being on the show.
All right,
see you guys.
Thank you.